Mr. Henderson, reel 16. We're talking about baths, Mr. Henderson. Did you suffer from lice at all?
Thankfully, no. We'd heard about the lice situation in the First World War and how the people used to come on leave and left all the clothing outside because they didn't bring them in the house. But we never, thankfully, never suffered from lice. We had plenty of facilities to wash. We carried petrol, and we used to get in, keep our underclothes clean. That was a must. General Montgomery was a stickler. We had to shave every 24 hours. We had to have a shave every 24 hours. And we had to keep ourselves religiously clean. And being cavalry, of course, it wasn't hard to do in a tank. We had facilities where the infantry didn't. They were out in all weathers. They couldn't shelter in a lot of cases. But we used to have a petrol tin, a square petrol tin, that I've said we used to cut the top off, and put petrol, mix it with soil in a small hole, fill the can with water. One of these blocks of soap that I've been talking about, you'd peel it into small slivers, put it into your boiling water, and put all the underclothes of the tank crew in it and boil it. And the problem was getting it dry. There was one field we went in. It was a cornfield, and the corn was cut, and it was in the this must have been about August time or something. The corn was in stacks, and we laid all the underclothes. All the stacks were covered in underclothes where the lads had been washing. It was a fine day, and we must have been having a day off or something. Anyway, we got a chance to catch up on our washing, and that was how we got them dried. But we washed. Every week, all our washing was done.
Water supply wasn't a problem. You had plenty.
Water supply wasn't a problem. We carried jerry cans of water for emergencies and jerry cans of petrol. We had water carts that came up. Two water carts fed the whole regiment. One of those water cart men was killed. That was Carmichael. But whenever we saw any streams or anything, we could collect water, which was good enough for washing, but not for drinking. That was something else we had to be very careful about, drinking water. We couldn't drink any water except that water that came by water cart. And that was treated with whatever it was.
How often did you get medical checks? Just to see if you're okay.
Not very often. I do remember one case when we were all in all together, and the medical officer came one morning, and we had to all stand in line, and we had to drop our trousers, and he came along the front, right down the line, and he looked at you up and down, then you had to hold your hands out and turn them over, and pass on to the next one, and then you stood where he was, and he came round the back of the line and looked at you at the back, and then you pulled your trousers up, and it was, but that wasn't very often, and it was called an FFI, fit and free from infection, and but that didn't happen very often. We didn't go voluntary sick. I had all my hair off when they cut it off on the boat. We all did. We got it. There was two people cut my hair, and it was just hacked off. Knife and fork job, and it wouldn't grow. It never grew, and I'm jumping the line a bit here, but round about August time, September, round about September, October, I got an infection in my face, and I put up with it, and I used to see the medical bloke, and he gave me some blue stuff to put on, and every time I shaved, and it was like a scab, and my face got all scab, and then he gave me a white ointment and a white cloth to put on, with just an eyepiece and a place for your nose and your mouth, and the dust off the tank in front made it terrible, so eventually I had to go sick, and I went to see the MO, and he put me in a small hospital for about a fortnight. That was another little story. There was a shell came through the back. We were slept on a stage, and a shell came through the back during the night. But anyway, then there was an operation, sort of a post-mortem operation, and when we woke up in the morning, the stretcher with the... We did no beds, there were just stretchers we slept on. Was at the foot of the... Was on the stage with us, the chap that had the post-mortem. But that was another thing. That was this little hospital.
Where was that, do you recall?
That was somewhere in Holland.
That was some ahead of us, isn't it?
It wasn't a big hospital, it was just a... It was a casual receiving station place. But you were there, you were fed, and you were looked after. You didn't go into big hospital. There was no nurses or anything, just lads. But because I was in there, I lost my place on the... I had to go into another crew when I got back, because I'd lost my place. But that didn't matter. But at this particular time, I was in such an awful state. This was before I went into hospital. I was in such an awful state that they brought the regiment out of action for the regimental dinner and dance in Nijmegen for the anniversary of the charge of the Light Brigade, Balaclava Day, 26th of October. So I was in such a terrible state that I couldn't go. So I just stopped in the billet and didn't bother. But when I came back from hospital, it was all right. In 5 days, the last 5 days, they cut all the blisters off and squirted it with this newfangled stuff that had just come in then, penicillin powder from a powder spray, and it cured it after I'd put up with it for a long, long time. And that was the only things you got, you know.
So fighting through the Bocage again towards your action on Montpensant, or Pincon, you moved, I think you said, after about 5 or 6 weeks. 27th Armoured was broken up and you moved to 8th Armoured Brigade. Was that
yes,
before this action?
We had to take down our Seahorse, much to our regret. That was a beautiful... you've seen it, haven't you? That was a beautiful brigade sign, and it was a velvet. The next one we got was just a piece of cotton with a fox's mask on, and that was the 8th Armoured Brigade, 4-7 Dragoon Guards, 13-18th, and I think it was the Essex Yeomanry, I think. And that was what happened to the East Raden Yeomanry. Then I don't whether they went back to England or went into another brigade, I don't know. But anyway, that was us, and because we'd had a long relationship with the 4-7 Dragoon Guards. They were like our sister regiments, very much alike. And
this would be a new brigadier, no doubt.
Same brigadier,
Prior
Palmer. Yes,
it had a good reputation. Got a good reputation in town. The 8th Armoured, didn't it?
The 8th Armoured Brigade. Yes, yes. The 27th didn't get known so much because we weren't in action more than about 6 weeks, but that was a marvellous brigade. But we were seahorses, we did our job, we were horses of the sea, which was self-explanatory. We rode our tanks into the crests of the wave, into Normandy. But of course that made one brigade less. But we were against some very, very fine troops at that particular time. We had the 21st SS Panzers, the 9th and 10th SS Panzers. Now, I believe one of those, I've read later, that one or two of those divisions, panzer divisions, had come from the Russian front. They must have been pretty slick to get them from the Russian front to there in 4 or 5 weeks, especially the way the railways were. I mean, our lads, the RAF, were supposed to have bombed those railway lines so that no one could get anywhere near. But that's what the story was, that had come from the Russian front. Whether it was true or not, I don't know.
Had you, by this time, that we're talking about 5-6 weeks into the campaign, lost the adventure and were now...
Yes,
just becoming busy?
Very much so. We'd lost this, that sense of adventure had gone. This was... There wasn't the laughter, there wasn't the excitement anymore. It was a job, a hard job. And at that particular time you were wondering whether this was your last day or not. It was a different spirit. It was a, and I think everybody felt the same.
And the feeling towards the Germans, had that changed?
The feeling of the Germans was that it wasn't a game anymore. I think you took pleasure in shooting them. They were vermin. You had respect for them as troops. We had far more respect for the German troops than we had for the American troops. Because of the high discipline, purely because of the discipline. We would never call any of our officers by the first name, or neither would the Germans. But the Americans, it was just an ordinary thing. Hi, Bob. Well, I don't think you can fight a war properly like that. However, we had a great respect for them, for the discipline. And we've heard of cases where Canadian troops were supposed to have been shot. I believe they were shot, prisoners. And other cases where a lorry load of prisoners have been taken into a wood and shot. I think we only had five people taken prisoner, and they were one of the lads that was taken prisoner was talking to him afterwards, said that his friend, who he's never seen since the war and he's tried to find, had got run over by a German motorbike and sidecar and hurt his leg, and he found an old cart and put him in the cart and pushed him for miles. They walked miles and miles they had to walk. And this was the Hitler Youth that had them. It was the Hitler Youth that came out of the woods in the morning and took these five and killed one. But we did find, in taking the wood where some of our boys had been laid wounded, that they'd been left quite comfortable. They'd been left with cigarettes handy and covered with a blanket. So you couldn't expect any more than that from the enemy. That happened on one occasion.
Didn't come across any situation where they'd committed some atrocity with civilians, as they
might. No. Not then. After the war, we did spend 3 weeks in a camp, but that's later on. This was after the war. That was a terrible thing.
You were saying that you never fought as a large tank.
You never went in. It wasn't like the charge of the Light Brigade. Even at the charge of the Light Brigade, the whole regiment didn't go in together. You fought as little groups that were assisting various platoons or various companies of infantry. And anyway, you couldn't have. I wasn't in the desert, but probably in the desert it may have been possible to go in as a full squadron, which was 20 tanks, but certainly not in Bocage country. You were going more or less as individuals, one behind the other. You couldn't even go line abreast.
So gradually you were fighting through this territory. Have you any memories before we come to the main action at the mountain?
Well, the main action at the mountain was more or less the same as what we'd been. It was just a continuation of what we'd been going through, fighting village to village. We had to take a village. You might take the village or a hill, and then find that you couldn't hold it. That they would put a counterattack in, with heavy losses, especially among the infantry, and then you'd have to go back the following day and take it. Now, we had this with the Americans, where we took the same position three times, because we went with all kinds of infantry. We went, I think, two or three times we were working with the American infantry, and we found that we might take one place three times, on one occasion, and have it to be lost and have to retake it. They held on. The Germans weren't going to give an inch. Every village had to be fought for, every wood, and every hill had to be fought for. There was no easy way in that time.
What's your memories?
There was later.
Yeah. What's your memories? What's your memories of the Montpensant action?
We fought up to it and round about the base of it for 2 days. It was the typical kind of action that we'd got used to. It was to and fro in sort of thing. There was infantry, German infantry with bazookas in little woods. Things like that. You know, you had to shell woods before you ever went into them. You had to put HE into the wood before you... that type of thing. In case there was any German infantry in there, whether there was or not. Things like that. When you were in advance, you had to try and put smoke down. Smoke was all right in its way, but of course you couldn't see what you were doing then, and it was difficult for the driver to see where he was going. We had to use smoke on a lot of occasions for covering movements and things, you know. But it was just fighting to the bottom of the hill, to the bottom of the mountain. It was just a large hill, really, very steep at one side. Now, we were going up the other side, from the west, I think we were going. I think they said it was the west side. We didn't go up the sharp piece, where it was a quick dash. The battle really only started, the actually taking of Mount Pinkin, only started more or less 6 o'clock in the evening, and it was taken that evening. But it was the battles before that took the casualties and things.
Who were you working with?
We were working with the 4th and 5th Wiltshires, and we were working with the Somerset Light Infantry. I think it was the Somerset Light Infantry. Marvellous they were. Well, I think it was the 185 or 189 Brigade, I forget which, something like that. We worked with that brigade quite a lot. It was more or less our brigade. They were absolutely fantastic. I can't understand how people can advance like that as infantry and give their lives away. I'm not an infantry man. I was never trained to be an infantry, but to see them, it made you proud to be British, really. To see those lads standing fast, you know.
To get to the top of the mountain, as you say, it was a bitterly fought action, albeit short. How was the top taken in the end? How did you manage it?
Well, apparently, we were coming up the other side, which was going to be a long... We wouldn't have done it that day. In fact, we didn't. We didn't get up till the following day. Our part, there was 7 tanks of A Squadron, 2 troops. One of them slid off the edge. One of them slid over into a quarry and turned over 3 times. And the officer, apparently, the lad that was coming up was a lad called Beasley, and that was a firefly that went over. It had a 17-pounder on. And he climbed up the bank and stopped said Beasley and said, "There's your tank down there. This is mine." And off he went. Another chap, Reggie Binns, his clutch went, one of those 7, his clutch went on, because it was such a steep thing. It was so steep that the infantry had a job climbing up with all the gear they had on. And eventually two tanks got up. I forget the name of the thing. I'm terrible memory for names. Two tanks got up, and that was how it was taken. And they were still up there. And in the dark, and there was a fog on the top of that. They could hear them talking, and eventually the other tanks came up, and then later in the evening, pretty late, the infantry managed to get there and find the tanks. They must have been very lucky to drop on them, and we were still coming up the other side of this the not so steep part. This steep part was quite impossible to get up. I think that's why they got up, because I don't think the Germans thought that they could get up that. It was so steep. But this was the miraculous part of it, that they did get up. And caught them completely by surprise.
And you being the fire, were you, as you were trying to force your way up?
Yes. They could see every move we made, and we were under fire, and then all the way. And even where we'd been parked before we set, caught at the bottom of the hill, when we got to the top and seen where we'd been, they could see every move we made. You know, they could see everything we did. If you went to the toilet, they could see exactly what you were doing. We were very lucky, I think. We're very lucky that we just didn't get smashed to pieces at the bottom while we were waiting to come up. And then we were lucky that found this little track, these two, and got up to the top. And dug in through the night with the infantry around them. And then in the morning, we were lucky again in the morning because it was very, very foggy. And we got up, and they went down, and then there was a counter-attack would have been put up that would have knocked us off, because we weren't in big numbers. We would have got knocked off, but the fog, I think the Germans got lost, or they couldn't see or couldn't make it, and so we held on. We were very lucky, I think.
Were you still with headquarters, troop?
Yes, yes.
You're still with
attached to B Squadron at this particular time.
Artillery support was from our own side. Was that good?
I can't remember any artillery support on Mont Pinkin. I think it was only our own guns that was in support there. I think because it was so high, I don't think they could. They couldn't bring them on the top there.
What was the scene, as you recall, on the top when daylight did come?
Oh, it was. It was just like a hill in a flat space. It was just like an island in a sea. You could see miles away around. It was perfectly flat all the way around Normandy. All green fields and. A marvellous view. You could see everything that moved, and once we'd got that was a marvellous thing. We got a battle on it for doing it, and yet we didn't realise at the time that it was going to be a battle on it. It wasn't a battle. We got a battle on it, but we didn't realise we were doing anything out of the ordinary. That was the funny thing. And then we learned later that Mont Pinkin was a battle on it. So was the invasion on the beaches was another battle under as well. That's also on our Gidon.
Were there many dead and wounded on the top when you got there?
No. Oh, there was a few Germans dead up there, which we left. But they weren't in very big numbers, really. I mean, it doesn't take many people to fire heavy guns on top of there.
We haven't discussed really to any length snipers. Were they a problem to you throughout
yes.
this campaign?
Yes. At the bottom of Mount Pinkin, we lost one of our sergeant majors from A Squadron or C Squadron, Jock Parks, A Squadron. Sergeant major was killed by a sniper. We lost quite a few by a sniper. A friend of mine, there was two who got married at Skipton prior to D-Day. One was the lad that's just written to me now, Gil Masters. The other one was hit by a sniper in the head, but he wasn't killed. But he was never the right, he was never the same, especially if he'd had a drink. He was an embarrassment if he met you in a pub. He was loud and we think it was all to do with this. He was a little bit queer. Dead now, of course. But sniping was an occupational hazard, you could say. The crew commanders used to have the heads out. They were, and that's when they got hit by snipers.
Drivers, did you used to have your heads out and have a similar danger?
Yes. I didn't like it down, but you were told to get your head down. I mean, if you'd got hit while you were driving, it could have killed the rest of the crew, the crew, like.
So you were under pretty tight rein.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, you saw that photograph, we looked like tramps. But the crews were very highly disciplined. And when they said to you, drive a left, you automatically went left, even if you knew that there was going to be a barrage of 57 heavy guns in front of you. Drive a left, you went left. Death of Glory, I suppose it was. You did as you were told. You didn't say, what? I'm not really going in there. You know, what they would do today, I don't know. But in those days, when the officer spoke, or a sergeant, you did it, and did it quick. There was no answering back. There was never any answering back, no questioning.
What was the date of the Montpensier battle?
6th of August, 10 o'clock at night. When we got up, it was about 6 o'clock when they started. In 4 hours, it was taking about 4 hours. But it wasn't that, getting up that slope, it was before that when it, where the battle took place, really. The battle for Mount Pinkin was before that. And then at the foot of the mountain, the following day was Plessis Grimald. The infantry had several setbacks to get there. And I believe the Welshers were down to... The colonel was killed. The colonel of the Welshers was killed at the bottom of Mount Pinkin, trying to get across. There's a little stream, trying to get across there. They were down to... They'd lost a lot of men during the 2 days fighting. A lot. It wasn't the casualties on the hill, it was the casualties before. That was the real battle.
The Durhams came in shortly after, around Plessis Grimald, and carried out an attack from there. Did you get to work with the Durhams?
We got to work with the Durhams about three times. I did write it down where we were. I found out in the history, but I'd lost it somewhere. There was six Durhams as well, but I didn't know any. I tried to find some of our local boys. But I asked, you know. There could have been Bishop Auckland boys or anything, a different company. But in one particular place, we were the six Durhams. Breville, my friend, I was telling you about my friend Tommy Buck that lost his driver. And I thought of his driver during the... He was a good footballer. I remember it, I was going to tell you, I tell you remembering for names. Well, he was hit near Breville, and he sent one of his crew back to stop the tanks coming up, not to go straight on, because it was covered by some heavy guns, and they came back into the Durhams, where the Durhams were, and the Durhams looked after them. And one of them was wounded. The gunner was wounded, and the driver was killed. And that was Tommy that lost three tanks in about eight days. I think that was his second tank. So that would be somewhere about within a week of Normandy, of the landings. Well, of course, the Durhams came in on the Durhams came in at over
D-Day.
On D-Day, but on...
They were a follow-up brigade.
Were they? Aye.
Came in about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, D-Day, as against...
Aye. Anyway, we met them at Breville, and they looked after them, and then Tommy got back and got another tank, eventually.
What happened to you next, after the mountain and Plessis Grimald?
We took... That was about the 6th of August. 7th, Mont Pinkin was captured on the 7th. That was the village of Plessis Grimald. And then we were fighting our way then towards the Seine. Our next big job was going to be crossing the Seine.
So this would be the time that the Germans collapsed in Normandy, and you had Falaise. The Falaise operation.
There was the Falaise operation, yes.
What are your memories of that period?
The Falaise, I don't know what date Falaise was. It must have been before we crossed the Seine. So that would be between... We crossed the Seine, I think, on the 26th of August, or the 27th or 28th, around that time. So between the 6th, so we had 20 days. Now, a week of that would be taken up at... We're shelling for a week. So they were in line, the tanks were in line, we had our shirts off, it was red hot. And all we were doing was loading and firing the guns into Falaise and the surrounding area of Falaise, point blank range. And the typhoons were coming in, screaming in, and strafing all the area round about Falaise.